Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
During the summer, get above an average of like 53, 54 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's why they drink as much as they do.
They do.
You can play golf around the clock, though.
A lot of vodka. You can play golf around the clock. It was light 24-7.
It was,
there.
Just occluded by the rain.
But it was raining.
Right.
And cloudy. You were right about the airfare. Super cheap to get there on Iceland Air.
That's right.
And it's a great airline.
Yeah.
Terrific airline. When you get there, it is a fortune. Everything is super expensive there. Reykjavik.
Because they can't grow their own food.
You can have Reykjavik. I mean.
I like the Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Me too.
The dulcet tones of Kip Sheeman, who I played golf with yesterday. We're at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest, about two blocks inside the district line in the capital of the United States of America. We are live at Chatter. We're doing this. I don't know when you're going to hear it, but it's Monday, and we're starting.
You're hearing it now.
Yeah,
right?
But we're starting the podcast at 6:30. Nigel, when is it going to drop?
It should drop tonight, I would say, depending on what time we finish, hopefully around 8:30, 8:45.
So that's great.
Yeah.
So we haven't done this at night before. I don't even really know why I decided to do it. Well, I do know, because we are a for-profit enterprise, and I thought maybe I could get people in here to eat and drink, chatter.
Right.
So we're hoping you people will do that. A couple of notes. My friend Michael Farr is here. I'm trying to convince him to take this space every once in a while and do a podcast, and he wanted to observe how this was done. And later on in the show, I may drag him into the show and see how he does. So he's screaming from the background. Okay, we got a wedding announcement. Camilla and Demetrios are getting married on September 24th at 4 o'clock in the afternoon at the William Penn Hotel in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And Demetrios writes, "I'm a loyal little from Western Pennsylvania who will be getting married in a couple of months. Enclosed, you will find an invitation to our wedding in Pittsburgh. I come from a Greek family, and my fiance is Uzbek."
Wow.
Sure. Have you been to Uzbekistan?
I have not.
Just
it is, I believe it is on the southern border, maybe on the southeastern side of Kazakhstan.
Okay.
Yes, like with the Turkmenistan and Tajikistan, all those
lesser stands. All the stands.
Yeah.
Yeah. We hope to have the most exciting Greek-Uzbek wedding this world has ever seen, and we would love for the entire crew to be here. We promise it'll be a great night full of fun, food, and plenty of traditional Greek and Uzbek dancing. Liz Clark
Sounds
is here.
Scary.
Have you ever done the traditional Uzbek dancing?
I have not, but I would so love to.
Well, we're all invited. I mean, we can do this.
It's the 24th, maybe?
His parents owned a local sports-themed restaurant in western Pennsylvania named after the late Chuck Tanner, manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Sure.
Remember him? So he's a big sports fan. And his wife-to-be turns out that she used to come to Chatter when it was Chad. She would go with co-workers for happy hour. So she knows about you as the old man I listened to on the radio and the only person who is just as concerned as I am about the parking situation at any venue. So we wish them all the luck in the world.
Congratulations.
That's good. To get into the show, Steve Sands will be with us later, but I wanted to mention the PGA. I know it's over 24 hours old, but I wanted to just say that I think Justin Thomas won the tournament. I know a lot of people around him lost it, but I think he grabbed it and he won it. And Gary, you said something. Was it Spike or Ike?
Spike and Ike. But
explain this.
Well, Spike has, as some may know, some may not know, but this. What is it? Three is a triumvirate. What's four? This quad.
Quadrennial.
You call it? Yeah, this group of four guys.
Quadvekistan, I believe. Turkestan.
There's this group of four guys that includes the very well known Ricky Fowler and Jordan Spieth. They're four
very
best
well
friends.
Known.
And the other two are Justin Thomas and Smiley Kaufman. Lesser known, but also successful on tour. Uh-huh. And these guys travel together, they go on these. Awesome, I put that in quotes, but you know, if you're early 20s,
they take pictures
awesome
of themselves
trips,
with their shirts off, jumping into the water.
They're in the Bahamas, renting boats, jumping off, going crazy. And,
and
my kid is well aware of this and thinks these guys are like the cat's meow. And he, in fact, said to me, "Dad, you got to face it. Phil's just never going to win anything ever again. It's over." I mean, he's basically rubbing my face in it as these millennials pluck up all the
I've
majors.
Never seen, and I've watched a lot
They're
of
fun.
Golf tournaments. I've never seen at the end of a golf tournament the other players hug a guy after he won and beat them. Ricky Fowler and Jordan Spieth got beat by Justin Thomas, and they hugged him afterwards, and you could see that this was heartfelt
Jordan
stuff.
Spieth, I'm saying this very genuinely, appears that he may not have been happier had he won it himself. I mean, he was thrilled.
Because he's got a couple. Ricky Fowler, on the other hand, doesn't have
any. You could argue he wanted this one pretty badly. I mean, there was something at stake here.
Well, maybe he should have picked a better guru to be in his corner. Who was walking around with him and he spent time with to sort of learn how to play under pressure.
Michael Phelps. Oh, I knew you hate Michael Phelps.
There's a history there.
Saboteur.
Oh, yeah.
So Rory didn't do well, and Dustin Johnson didn't do well, and Jordan Spieth didn't do well, and Jason Day blew up on Saturday, took an 8 on the last hole and knocked himself out of it. And here comes Justin Thomas, who's got a 59 this year and has won a bunch of events in Hawaii, and he looks
like the
real deal, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, we'll ask Sands, but it's his fifth win on tour. Yeah. It's not like he just arrived. I mean, this guy's been a force on tour all year.
So let me get to, because Sands is going to cover this, let me get to the moment on the weekend, the sports weekend, that was totally captivating on video and looked ultimately a lot worse than it turned out to be, and that is Bryce Harper. This is on Saturday night, and it is, although it's the first inning, it's very, very late on Saturday night. It is after 10 o'clock because the Nats waited 3 hours. And it wasn't in the Nats. This is Major League Baseball. I have to explain this. This is about scheduling. The San Francisco Giants were in Washington. They don't want to come back to Washington. They were rained out on Friday night, so they scheduled a day-night doubleheader for Sunday. If they get rained out on Saturday, they're going to have a day-night, middle-of-the-morning triple header. They're not going to do that. So they really wanted to get the Saturday night game in, and they waited a preposterously long amount of time. No, I mean, there'd be no reason to go to that game.
By the way, unlikely to matter for either team.
No, because the Nats are going to win their division easily, and the Giants are going to be also
Rams. That's right.
And the league took over that part and said you're going to play. So it's in the first inning, right?
Yes.
So it's about 10:15, 10:20 Eastern time. And Bryce Harper trying to what?
And raining steadily.
Raining steadily even at that point.
Yes.
Even at that point. And Bryce Harper, in his zeal to get to first base, slips in an awful way over first base, lands very awkwardly, grabs his left knee, and all you see, basically the shot is Bryce Harper, who we think is going to be the MVP, Bryce Harper holding his left knee, and more hair than you've ever seen on any human being
like
since
the
1960s.
Yes. Like a lion's mane.
Yeah. What were your thoughts when
I saw this footage and my stomach just lurched. I still find it hard to believe that there's not ligament damage. I'm not making
they
the
got
connection
so
between
lucky.
Bone
yeah. oh,
bruise because
shape.
It was like a Gumby situation. I mean, it was just completely contorted.
That's the wrong way.
You know, he's so committed to every move and run that he makes. I mean, there was nothing ginger about the way he approached that base. It was just all in, and then you just thought, oh, this is destruction of, you know, tissue involved.
They can't win. They haven't won a playoff series with him. They have zero chance to win without him. And I don't know when was the last time you stood next to a major league base? Is it recently?
You mean the actual base?
The actual
or
base.
Player?
The actual base.
Me?
Have you, Gary?
Not in recent
memory.
Oh,
it would be years. I mean, I've done it, but it's years.
They are much thicker.
Yeah, they're tall.
They're like 4 or 5. They look like an apple pie. They're like 4 or 5 inches tall.
I get your point.
They are hammered into the ground.
Yes. Yeah.
There's no give on these
You're
things.
You're really not supposed
and
to step on them
like
that. And
coated with a rubber compound, which when it gets wet.
And that one apparently had been sprayed with Pam as well.
It's a terrible circumstance.
I have to tell you, my reaction to that, his
agent, Scott Boras, said change these bases.
Of course, my heart was in my throat. You're a gasp immediately.
Not just if you're a Nats fan, it's when Mike Trout goes out and breaks his thumb.
You don't want to see
that.
You don't want to see Brady shred his
And by
knee.
The way, Mike Trout and
fan.
The California Angels are due in Washington, and there would have been story after story after story, who's the best young player in baseball, and now one of them's out.
So as they continue to play that replay, I have this moment of just like absolute clarity, and I realized it doesn't make a difference what it costs. Like, this replay is why you sign that guy, whatever it costs, because everything he does is spectacular. And I mean, even that injury, like you see it in slow-mo, his hustle, the grit, the determination, to your point, that he's coming off the base, coming to the base, and he gets on the base, he slides off, his knee buckles in this like oddly grotesque fashion. He's then launched in the air, appears to be 8 or 9 feet off the ground at his apex.
In the air.
And then he
like
comes
a cat.
With this hair flying. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was something that like Hollywood would like draw it up that way. I mean, it was so spectacular.
And you think to yourself immediately, my God, he has torn his knee apart. I thought of Mickey Mantle as a young player when he tore his knee apart, falling in a hole in Yankee Stadium. Right. And as great as he wasn't as great as he could have been. And I thought that about Harper right then and there. Now, everybody gets lucky because it's a badly bruised knee, but he will be back to play this year because an operation takes him out.
Yeah.
It's done.
Sure.
He takes him out.
Who knows how strong he comes back? Who knows?
I don't know.
I mean, if he comes back in, you know, the end of September, will his timing be ready for the playoffs? I mean, you need some time to sort of get acclimated to the game again, don't you?
I think he'll be fine. I mean, I think he'll be fine, but you hope he'll be fine. But now, you growing up in England, you didn't play baseball.
No, we did
cricket.
Not.
But when you grew up,
yes,
you're far younger
you
than
batted
I.
Something
when I played Little
far
League,
younger.
When I played Little League, the bases were canvas. Mm. They were on the ground.
They were bags.
Yes. Right.
They were. That's why it's called a three-bagger, Tony. They used to be bags, right?
You know, and nobody slipped on them. Mm-hmm. They weren't 4 or 5 inches high. They weren't coated in rubber. They weren't painted white. So there was just a canvas.
Are you moving for safer bases now?
Well, Scott Boras is.
Yeah.
And Scott Boras controls half the Nats.
It seems like a reasonable idea, doesn't it?
Yes.
To make them a bit safer.
Why do you need them quite like this for television purposes?
I think some of it because they
I mean, you don't want to even step on these
them.
Things.
Yeah.
You know, they're
and you
really
don't.
High
they
up.
Put cameras in them?
Yeah, sometimes
yes,
they'll
do.
Put cameras in the
they
back.
Do. In playoffs,
the base.
Certainly.
Yes. So I think that's probably TV is like, no, 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 we love the ability to have cameras out there.
Of course, it should be pointed out, what he did, the way he landed on that base would not have been terribly safe on a dry base.
That's right.
I mean, you don't run over a base like that.
No, you don't step on the top of it like that.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it was kind of a
supposed
perfect
to touch
storm,
it with your
no
toe,
pun intended.
Not your entire foot.
Right.
And flip over like that.
Man, that was
But you look at the Nats, you look at their outfield. Every single outfielder has been hurt for an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. Their starting center fielder, Adam Eaton, out for the whole year. Their reserve center fielder, Michael A. Taylor, out for a couple of months. Jason Worth fouled a ball off his foot 5 years ago. I mean, he hasn't been back. He hasn't been back.
No, he hasn't.
Where is
now
he?
Now Bryce.
What's he doing? Trey Turner, the shortstop. Bryce Harper now out for an extended period of time. Has there been any team in baseball? I mean, and we're not even counting Mr. DL Steven Strasburg. I mean, we're just talking about everyday players.
No, they've been decimated.
Everyday players.
Yeah.
So very, very lucky.
Yeah,
the best player in baseball right now playing actively and playing for a while is Giancarlo Stanton. He keeps hitting home runs. He hit about 10 off the Nats last
week.
He's
got 20-something in 30 games, right? I think I saw 21
in 33
games.
Does he have now 42
games?
Or something like that?
That's right.
He's on pace right now for 59. Gary?
Sir?
If he got 60, would you demand he be tested every single day of the year?
No, I would not. I trust that they're going to botch that up, whether they're testing him or not. I will assume he's clean until I hear he's being tested.
Do you? Well, everybody gets tested.
Yeah.
Do you wonder? Do you wonder about him?
No. I think if let's just take theoretical player X, and let's say that theoretical player had been using for many years and now was no longer using. Would there be some residual benefit to all
know.
Of that use?
I don't know.
Okay, I'm willing to believe that there would be.
I don't think baseball players get the benefit of the doubt. I think so many of them. What do you think, Liz?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't
that's
think
really
do.
A sad state. But I'm sorry, I don't know. I know of him, but I don't know him like you guys know him.
He's a beast.
But he hasn't had some eye-popping physical transformation.
No,
remember how
he's
Canseco
big.
Did that?
He's like Aaron Judge is really big.
Well, if
and he's
that
always
has
put
been
up
fairly constant, it wouldn't be the first thing I think about. But sadly, it's sort of like Olympic swimming or Olympic weightlifting. I mean, there are, or God knows, cycling. You default to, is this a clean performance?
I don't know. That
sad.
Anybody has gotten 60 since Roger Maris that wasn't cheating. And so if he got to 60, I don't know what the highest number is. George Foster had 56 one year.
I think, didn't Hank Greenberg have 58 one year?
That's before Roger Maris.
First of all, he probably won't get to 60. But one of the reasons why I don't want to think that is because if I think that about him, the first guy I would have to think about, and it pains me to say this, is Scherzer. You would have to think a guy like Scherzer,
really?
With his dominance, if you want to play that game.
I love Scherzer.
You just want to play.
I love Scherzer.
I love Scherzer, too. I'm just saying, if you start pointing fingers at anyone who's statistically dominant.
Well,
saying,
Clayton Kershaw is statistically dominant, and the way he is built, you would never think.
Hmm.
You wouldn't think so.
Right.
He's gangly. Right. But he's long. No, I wouldn't think so. Chris Sale. You wouldn't think so. Chris Sale weighs 150 pounds.
And he's long. Right.
Yeah. So
but those things can do different. It's not all about Bash Brothers.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
All right. All right. We will take a break. We will come back. Steve Sands will talk about the PGA. We will have news. Liz has written a very big piece on Kirk Cousins, and we will talk about that at some point in the show. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a Casper ad. Casper is a sleep brand that created one perfect mattress sold directly to consumers, eliminating commission-driven inflated prices. Its award-winning sleep service was developed in-house. It has a sleek design. It's delivered in a small, how did they do that, size box. In addition to the mattress, Casper also offers an adaptive pillow and soft, breathable sheets. The mattress industry has forced consumers into paying notoriously high markups. Casper's revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to the consumer. An in-house team of engineers spent thousands of hours developing the Casper. It combines supportive memory foams for a sleep surface that's got just the right sink and just the right bounce. Plus, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature through the night. Buying a Casper mattress is completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery and free returns with a 100-night home trial. That's 3+ months. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up. They'll refund you everything. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit. I mean, people have gotten married sooner than that, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it. They have all of these mandatory things to mention, and they insist that we mention one. So here's one. The Casper mattress has over 30,000 global reviews. Joseph G. from Colorado, and I know you know him well. We have somebody here from Denver, and he probably knows Joe G. from Colorado, said, and I quote, "As a former athlete, sleep and comfort is key to performance, and Casper does that now for my life and my wife." What does that mean? For my life and my wife. Key to performance. Where are we going with this? So let's do one more. Skip the typical mattress shopping game. Buying a Casper is easy. You order online. It's delivered to your door in a compact box. There's free shipping and free returns. You can get $50 towards any mattress purchase if you listen to this show by visiting www.casper.com/Tony and you use Tony. Terms and conditions apply.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
George Christian sent in this song from his roommate's band, Silmar, an indie rock band based in Cincinnati, Ohio. Cincinnati, Ohio, I believe, is called the Queen City, which is also what Baltimore is sometimes
Charm
called.
City. Charm City.
Oh, that's Charm City.
Charlotte,
yeah,
okay.
Charlotte Queen City.
And he writes he's a big fan of the podcast. Would love to get them some exposure. You can check them out on iTunes and Spotify. This is a song called I Love Everything. And if you have a good roommate like that, that's very nice. Normally, I would turn to Michael now, and I'd say, Michael, how do people send their music in? But Michael's in South Carolina, so...
Well, they can send it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Wonderful.
That's what he would have said.
That's what he would have said.
More
Steve
eloquent.
Sands joins us now from NBC and the Golf Channel. Steve Sands just spent the last few days of his life in Charlotte, North Carolina, at Quail Hollow. And I'd written down to ask you your overall assessment of the final round of the PGA. And I'm gonna amend it to say that Wilbon came back from Scotland last night and said he'd watched the entire tournament in England and Scotland and then watched it on the plane coming back over and thought that the final round was a total zero. And I said, well, what about Thomas's putt that fell in on 10? And what about, you know, his birdies on 13 and 17? And Wilbon was totally dismissive. So I'm going to ask you, Steve, what you thought of the final round itself, given that a lot of guys ahead of Thomas gagged it up.
Let me just say a couple of things. Charlotte, by the way, is the queen city like Cincinnati.
Yes.
And the reason people in Baltimore hate us from Washington is because we're 20 minutes away and you don't know that Charm City,
no,
and
I didn't
Queen
know.
City, and all the, come on.
I knew the block.
Gary,
I knew the block. That's all I knew was the
you
block.
Gary have to straighten me out, Tony? Come on, man.
Gary can do
come
that.
Come on.
All right.
Not right. All right, so I don't agree with Michael. I thought it was really good golf, really exciting. It was a two-shot win. It was a three-shot lead, and then he bogeyed the last when he was being careful at 18.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What does Michael want? Stars? You can't have stars every time. This is not the NBA. It is not supplanted already in June of 2018 that we're going to get Cleveland or Boston versus Golden State in the NBA.
Yeah, you could argue he is a star. This kid. Well, I mean, you know.
Justin Thomas. Yeah. Justin Thomas will be in the Hall of Fame. He has 5 wins now, including a major championship, and he's 24 years of age, and he is en route to being what everybody thought he would be 4 or 5 years ago when he was a freshman at Alabama, and then he was a really good player for a very short time on the Web.com tour. He's come out on the PGA Tour, and he's kicking butt. I mean, I realize everybody wants Jordan and Rory and Dustin and Ricky and Jason, but that's not how golf works. It's not, you know, the Patriots are going to be there, all right? In golf, that's not how it works. Now, I thought the golf was excellent, and the course played well. The guys played well, and somebody went out. We talk about this a lot, Tony. Somebody went out and won it.
Yes.
Nobody lost it.
He won
it. Justin went out and grabbed it and won it.
He won it, and the people ahead of him, Kisner, I'm not going to ask you if you find him not likable. I find him not likable only because the day before he never smiled once. I mean, he just seems to not want to be in the position he was in. But he did not do well in the final round. Stroud, his pants were a disaster, and he didn't do well. And Hideki, they didn't do well. But your point is well taken, that Justin Thomas won the golf tournament, and he appears to be the goods. This is not Trevor Immelman or, you know, Lucas Glover. This is not somebody who you wonder, will he ever win another major? You would say, Steve, that Justin Thomas is going to win majors because you just said he was going to be in the Hall of Fame. So you must think so.
Let me tell you a couple of things that Justin Thomas has done in 2017. He shot a 59.
Yeah.
Very few people have done that on the PGA Tour. At the U.S. Open, now you can make a strong case that Aaron Hills wasn't a real, in quotations, U.S. Open, but it was still a U.S. Open. He shot the lowest round under par, in relation to par, that's ever been shot at a U.S. Open, and he did not play well on Sunday when he was only a couple back and he had a very good chance to win, and he used that experience yesterday. He was in the exact same spot, and, Tony, he bogeyed the first hole.
Oh, he was almost
way.
Out of it, badly. He made a bogey save. He could have easily gotten 6 on the first hole.
Yeah, he made a mess out of the first hole, and he gathered himself, and I think he gained a lot of experience by not being able to close the deal at Aaron Hills when Brooks Koepka won the U.S. Open in June. You know, he's also won another PGA Tour event. I mean, this guy could very well be, I think he's absolutely the front runner. I think he's going to win PGA Tour Player of the Year.
Yeah.
If nothing strange happens in the FedEx Cup playoffs where he doesn't play well, or if, say, Jordan Spieth goes on to win because he won the Open as well. But Justin Thomas is for real, man. This guy can really, really play.
So we're watching this thing, and over the course of the tournament, much is made of the last 3 holes and the green mile, which is a cute thing. And one of the writers, I guess, came up with it a few years ago.
Can't stand it.
You know, well, I was going to ask you about this. It's sort of like bear trap at PGA National. Did they talk about it too much? Is it really that hard? Is it that big a deal, or is it just a catchphrase?
No, it's very hard. It's the closing stretch of a major championship. It doesn't matter if you're playing at Columbia for the club championship. It's hard to finish the last 3 holes, no matter where it is. I think that, you know, writers, and no offense to writers, I love writers, but, you know, the writers back when the Wachovia Championship started, which is now the Wells Fargo Championship, which is played every year at Quail Hollow, they wanted something to identify that last 3-hole stretch, like
the snake pit
at the Valspar Championship, or, as you said, what was the other one you talked about? The bear trap at PGA National at the Honda Classic. I don't know. I'm sick of hearing about the green mile. It's just a great stretch of golf.
It is, Sands, or is it not? Correct me. Maybe it's not the top 3 handicap holes. I don't believe that's the case. But it is the highest. It was the highest scoring 3 holes, right? It was the 3 holes were. Was it not this week? Yeah. Okay.
No question. But unless
which is a little unique.
Unless Tom Hanks is walking down the aisle, let's leave green mile alone. All right.
Right.
Okay.
Michael Clark Duncan.
Yes.
Right.
But yes, Gary, you're right. It's a very difficult stretch of golf, and it's a worthy place to have a major championship. They will have the President's Cup in 2021 at Quail Hollow.
Right.
They will have a PGA championship back in Quail Hollow in the next 10 years once the PGA moves to May in a couple of years. It's a great golf course, I just, you know, gimmicky names in the middle, whatever. I don't care about that.
So here's what I wanted to ask you. Is it legitimately hard, or was it made artificially hard because of impossible pin placements?
No, very hard. It's been hard since the very first Wells Fargo Championship back in 2003. That 16th hole, you can get it a little bit. 17, you see over the water, with a good hole location, it's a very, very, very tough par 3. And you also have to ratchet up the pressure of trying to win a tour event, or in yesterday's case, trying to win a major championship. And then 18 is a brutally difficult drive. Water all down the left and a bunker to the right. You saw very few guys hit fairways yesterday on 18, and then the second shot isn't easy as well. It's a great three-hole stretch. I just don't think you need a nickname for it, that's all.
Can I go to 18 for a second on Saturday and ask you what in God's name Jason Day was doing?
Well, I thought he was going to break his club, Tony, on that second shot. I think, you know, the game of golf at the highest level, or at our level for that matter, to me, is the most mental of all the sports. And you take a Jan Vandevelde in 1999 when he was trying to win the Open Championship at Carnoustie with a three-shot lead. And he's doing ridiculous things in the water.
Yes.
You know, Jason kind of, you know, I think he thought he could hit that second shot. And I just think he kind of lost his mind there for a little bit. And then he lost his concentration and ended up taking himself out of the championship. You can't do that, Tony. It's not good. Ask Ricky Fowler. Ricky Fowler had a triple on Thursday. Where'd he end up yesterday? Three shots back in the lead, which ended up winning. I mean, you know, you've got to concentrate every single time you're playing, no matter whether it's Thursday morning or Sunday afternoon. And Saturday afternoon basically took Jason Day out of the championship. And that was the last hole of the day for him. It was just a mind game to him, and he didn't pass the test.
Obviously, we've talked about Jason Day. The other three people that people would talk about are Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy and Dustin Johnson. I think I read a quote from Spieth saying that his game isn't as suited to the PGA as it is to all the other majors. I understand Augusta because it's always Augusta, but the U.S. Open and the British Open change venues all the time. What is he talking about? What does that mean?
I didn't love hearing him say that. Now, last week, Tony, we talked, and I told you that this golf course is not suited to Jordan Spieth's game.
Right.
There's no way. That kind of golf course is not the kind of place where Jordan can win, and it proved to be the case. That was an easy call. It wasn't like something I came up with. That was an easy one. But when we go to, you know, Belrive next year or other places, and Bethpage Black would fall under the category in 2019 for the PGA, just like Quail Hollow, too big a ballpark, not the kind of golf course where Jordan can maneuver his way around the track. I don't know why he said that. It was weird. You know, they go to different venues. I think he probably meant this last week as opposed to the actual PGA Championship, but I don't agree with him on that. He's won three of the four, and I think he's going to win a PGA at some point. I just didn't think it was going to be last week. Quail Hollow was just not the right test for him.
It's odd. I mean, like the U.S. Opens, they set these courses up at 7,500, 7,600 yards. So I guess
right.
Something like Aaron Hills is out of it for him. Shinnecock is going to be 7,500 yards.
Well, let's put it this way, Tony. I think there are certain guys in golf, Dustin, Rory, Jason, who can win on any type of golf course. There are other guys like Jordan Spieth, who, by the way, Justin Thomas, by the way, destroys a golf ball. He's about 150 pounds, 5'9", maybe, and he's in those guys' categories. But between overpowering a golf course, no matter where or what it is, Jordan Spieth doesn't fall into that category. Jordan Spieth, he can hit it plenty long, obviously, but he's more of a tactician than he is, you know, someone who's going to overpower a course. And I just don't think Quail Hollow was good for him. I don't know why he said that, though. He's in a different category than the other best players in the world who are young, who are now major champions. I think Jordan will win a PGA. I just don't think he's going to be on a golf course like a Quail Hollow.
Now, let me get you out of here on this, and it's a longer question. I noticed this. I said this on PTI today, and Wilbon laughed at me, but, you know, I think it's true. This was the first major that I can remember in which there was no talk whatsoever about either Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson. And it felt like, especially in the congratulatory phase where he's being, where Justin Thomas is hugging Fowler and hugging Spieth, it felt like the torch had been passed and that Tiger and Phil that's over. It's just over, and stop clinging to it. Do you have any sense of that?
Oh, there's no question. I think we talked about this last week, Tony. The thing about golf that's perhaps different than the other sports, I think I used the example of Joe Namath with the Rams and Willie Mays with the Mets, Jordan with the Wizards. You know, these guys end up playing somewhere else sometimes, and then they just don't play well, and then they go away. Whereas in golf, they end up not playing well, and they don't go away.
No, because too much
Phil
money.
Mickelson, because Phil, it's too much money, and also, what are they going to do? I mean, they're allowed to play. In other words, I think that if Michael Jordan could have played at a high level and somebody wanted to have him, he would have kept playing forever. In golf, you just keep playing because you're eligible to play, and you just, I don't know, I hate to say it, but you just kind of peter out a little bit. So Mickelson, again, a non-factor, did not play well at all. It'd be really interesting, Tony, to see if he is picked by Steve Stricker to be on the President's Cup team. He has been on every single President's Cup or Ryder Cup team for the Americans in the last two decades. That streak will end if he is not chosen, because he is not in the top 10 in the point system, and he will not be selected if other young guys are playing well. It'll be really interesting to see what Steve Stricker does. As for Tiger, Tony, man, he's been away a long time.
It's just over.
A long, long time. I think it's over for him. I think the winning at the highest level is over for Phil. But you're right. It was a nice feel last week of not a changing of the guard or a passing of the torch, but just here's what we have, and here's where the game is, and let's go see what happens. And one of those young, great players won. And nobody mentioned Phil or Tiger all week.
Thank you so much. You're our go-to person for everything now. Soon we're going to go to you for football and certainly hockey, certainly for the Capitals, so you can describe what choking dogs they are. It'll make me very
Sans,
happy.
Were you able to see any of the Redskins preseason game against the Ravens on Friday?
I actually did.
Brutal.
Oh, we'd love your thoughts.
Preseason guy, Gary.
Brutal.
Have we moved the ball a foot and a half yet? That's all I want to know. It was not pretty, well, but it's obvious.
The FedEx play
be,
of the
Skins are going to be I'm sorry, go ahead.
The FedEx play of the game was like a 4-yard plunge up the middle. Literally. That was like the play of the game in the broadcast.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's preseason football. Larry Brown off tackle, and it was fine for 3.5 yards. It was great. Right. Skins are going to be fine, 9-7, 10-6. Let's get those Nats healthy. That Bryce Harper off the base thing scared the heck out of me, man.
Yes, it should have. Yeah. It should have. They shouldn't be playing that game. No. They shouldn't be playing that game.
Yeah, what's up with that? Is that a learner thing, or is that
no? That's the league. That's the league, because the Giants. The Giants were done.
Back, right?
They're not coming back. So
yeah,
neither is Tiger. All right, I'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Steve.
All right, you guys be good. Take care,
Steve Sands, boys and girls. It's always a pleasure to have him. We will take a break. We will come back with news. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Brad Engel of Ellicott City, Maryland, who writes, I've been a big fan of yours for about 30 years, and I've never thought to contact you. I've never been known to be funny or witty, so I'm sure this is not worthy of reading on the air. Yeah, it is. I simply wanted to say thank you for the endless hours of reading and listening enjoyment since even before the bandwagon days. I began a job which included a one-hour commute each way. Your words, your stories, your insight, your charming vulnerabilities have made my commute mostly tolerable. I'm 58 years old. Kid. When I turned 50, I bought a guitar, learned how to play a little, and studied songwriting. Here's one I wrote called This Empty House. Isn't that nice? And he says, that's all for now. I'll touch base in another 30 years for another update. Take care.
It's lovely. Isn't
Brad Engel, Ellicott City, Maryland. Very, very nice. Nigel, you have news for us?
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. You were away last week, right? You were at the beach.
I was at the beach. And when I am at the beach, I do not turn on television for anything other than sports.
Yes. Really?
That's it.
Really?
I don't. And I watch news shows all the time. I consume cable news. I do not watch, so I don't know what went on. I don't have any idea. I just like to try to play golf.
We'll try and do this thing.
Farr is back there. He can tell you. I broke 90 a couple of times, which is a big deal
That's
for
very
me.
That's nice.
Big
very
deal
nice.
For me. Not for him. Breaking 80 is a big deal for him, but breaking 90 is a big deal for me.
Well, we'll try and do this in chronological order then. We'll start with North Korea. Now, you've heard that there's a bit of kerfuffle going on with the United States and North Korea.
Well, here's Something happened this morning that was astonishing to me. Hmm. Has North Korea indicated they're going to bomb Guam?
Well, they said
They said what?
At some point later this week that they'll be ready to attack them whenever they want.
Guam.
Yes, Guam.
No, I think it's more they're going to do a test right in the neighborhood.
Going to buzz
Guam.
It. They're going to maybe go fly by
Guam, but I don't think they've said they're going to bomb Guam. I thought it was more.
I think they've said a couple of different things, and one of them was like, "Yeah, we'll attack it if you guys keep your thing up. We'll keep going our way."
What is happening with this?
Well, you know that they've been testing these missiles, and they have nuclear capabilities. So now,
but
they
can't we take them out of the sky anytime we want to?
Well, the problem is, not whenever we want to.
Not with accuracy. I mean, how do you feel about a 50-50 venture on that? You feel comfortable?
No. Yeah.
Okay, then no.
No.
Is the answer.
And so now they develop these missiles that can actually hit your United States. They could hit. Mm-hmm. Technically, I think they could hit Washington, but. You know, very much San Francisco.
Wait, and they could hit the 20015?
Yes.
We don't want that.
This is why it becomes relevant for you. And so then President Trump said something to the effect...
He's still the president because I was away for a week.
He still is.
I just want to make sure.
He still is.
Okay, good.
He said, I'm trying to vote. Oh, yes.
He said that
North Korea would face fire and fury. He said this on Twitter, which of course he
No, he said this right. in front of cameras.
Was this in front of cameras? Yes. I thought this was Twitter.
No. He said in front of cameras. Essentially, the report that North Korea had the capability to arm a nuclear warhead and get it to U.S. territories... What was a story I believe was broken by the Washington Post when it was brought to his attention as he's up in Bedminster on vacation. He responded that, yes, I wasn't suggesting he was slacking any more than usual. His response was that if they did that, they would be met with fire and fury, the likes of which the world had never seen, which... Editorializing.
It sounds like
something the other guy would say.
No, it sounds like Jim Harbaugh.
The next day was locked and loaded.
Well, yeah,
right?
North Korea came back and said, really? You want to mess with us? And then he said, our military's locked and loaded. It's been a series of, you know, really? You want to go? And so now we don't really know where things stand. But all we know is that China told North Korea, look, if you strike first at the U.S., you're on your own. So...
Amazingly, as I saw many people alluding to on Twitter yesterday, you know, you had a rough week as president when threatening a nuclear war was the second worst thing you did.
Right.
Which was essentially the case.
And that, of course, takes us to Charlottesville.
Yes.
Where there was a...
That's terrible.
Yes.
Horrible.
There was a march
terrible.
This march, and I guess, you know, everyone's under the Bill of Rights, you know, everyone get the freedom of speech.
You have the freedom of speech and the freedom of assembly. You do have that.
But these people are particularly abhorrent.
Yes.
White supremacists, you know, the neo-Nazis, the KKK, they were upset about the removal. Was it a statue of Robert E. Lee?
That's correct.
Was being removed from Charlottesville.
Okay, there's no other side to this. This is terrible and needs to be condemned.
There aren't many sides?
There are not many sides.
Okay.
No. And needs to be condemned, and finally, after a couple of days, it was condemned. But let me get to another issue here that I think people can reasonably weigh in on, and that is these statues. These statues that have been a part of the country for 100 years, 150 years, the naming of high schools and colleges... And towns, and all of that. And my position for a long time, until I talked to my friend Brent Glass, who used to run the American History Museum, just like a couple of weeks ago, I said, well, you know, you don't want to destroy history. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could move some of these statues, but you don't want to take down the names of everything because this is a part of who we were and you have to teach about who we were. And Brent said something that I'd never even thought of before. He said, these people were traitors. They were traitors. They made war against their country. Mm. And he's not of the opinion that these statues, and I hope I'm not misquoting him, I don't think I am, he's not of the opinion that these statues, that you can change the names and all of that. You're a girl of the South. Yes?
Yes, no. I'm from a military family.
Right.
My parents are from the South. I've spent many years there.
In North Carolina, you spent a lot of years.
And I'm also an American history major, so your initial take on it, I completely understand that our country from day one is far from perfect. I mean, but the brilliance of
That's why they said in order to create a more perfect
union. Yeah, I mean, the brilliance of our Constitution and our years to date is that I feel the country's trying to get it right. I mean, acknowledging along the way, boy, that was not right. That was not right. I mean, I think it's a living, breathing constitution. It's never set up to be perfect, but it course corrections, that's the only way you learn through history. And as a, I mean, it is important that there is, you know, a Holocaust museum to educate always everyone about the horror of that and the evil of that. And chapters of our own country that are damnable and horrid, I think that has to be learned. It has to be part of the dialogue with each iteration. That said, I don't see that needs to be in a public square. I think there is a way you can move.
Would you move the statues?
I could.
Would you destroy the statues?
I think it's part of your history. Yes, I know that it should be in a public square. Could be in a museum.
In a museum.
But I really would love to hear smart, thoughtful people talk about this, because I find it very difficult. I don't believe in whitewashing your past, even if it's going to, you know, I just think...
How about the naming issues? Oof. How about the naming? There are so... I mean,
that's even
just
tougher.
In the Washington, D.C. area, aren't there a lot of schools named for... People sure. that were Confederate
well,
generals.
Well, there's a Jeb Stuart High, wasn't it?
You know, I'm yes. I think, you know, if it's a name that does not make every child, young person going there feel welcome and equal, there's no place for that name. Period.
So
that's easy for
that's,
me.
Yeah, this is an interesting point. Where are you on this?
Well, that speaks to the...
I mean, because what's like, happened in Charlottesville was terrible. And
yeah,
and that's a hate crime.
But I also think what happened in Charlottesville was far deeper and far more disturbing and has been fomenting and bubbling far longer. And this the issue of the statue was like the selling point.
That was just the easy way to do it.
I think so. I mean, yeah. I look at the images of the people carrying the torches and the hate in their faces and the images of the people they brutalized and beat. That's not about a statue. That's about something far more
insidious. But the statue is a symbol. Getting rid of the statues doesn't mean forgetting and disavowing the history. We need to be able to recognize and admit from the top down that we've made a mistake when we've made a mistake. And we've made plenty and we'll continue to make a bunch. I mean, this is something you've always held near and dear just as a writer.
Yeah.
You know, I made a mistake. I'm sorry. I'm going to do it again. And
try not to make the same one again.
Right. Yes.
You know, I'm sure I will make others. I'll try not to make the same one again.
So, you know, the history certainly is important. It should not be forgotten. But... And maybe it's a museum. I don't know. To Liz's point, I'm not smart enough to come up with a solution. But there is an element of celebration of these things when they're in a town square that to me is offensive.
Do you know what I've noticed? And I mean, when I was younger and I read about the Civil War, I just read about it from a great distance and I didn't really understand it. And I looked at the colors of the uniforms that people wore and I looked at the flags and it had no particular impact on me. Now, when I drive and there's a particular house on the way to Delaware, and I think it's on Route 16 that shows the Confederate flag, I think to myself, this is terrible.
Today, this week, that's
got to go. It's got to go.
Right.
And I was unaware of that until very recently. Mm-hmm. I really was. So, I mean, you can evolve a little bit. You can get better about these things. But I agree with you, Liz, that I don't think you destroying history utterly. I mean,
how do your children learn? I'm worried that
No one's advocating for the destruction of history.
Statues are a symbol to me of history.
Well, so some may be advocating for a destruction of the symbol, but no one is saying erase the history.
Or relocation of
museum. I've been to Gettysburg, and they have monuments for both sides. Yeah. Did you guys have a problem with that at the site of the battlefield, or does that still cross the line?
It's less celebratory. That to me is in a historic context.
And to me, you choose to go there. It's not like this is my town square.
In the middle of Old Town, there is a statue.
But it
belongs to everyone,
Tony. Yes. And I mean, I'm the last guy in the world who's going to be hanging a Confederate flag in my house. But it's a thorny issue in this country for you to say. And I get it. I mean, I don't want to see that either. But it's, I mean, there are freedoms there. I mean, for someone on their property, this it's is, just, it's.
Yes, very difficult.
Makes it a very it's tricky
very
issue. But
very difficult. What else you got?
Usain Bolt. You were talking with Steve Sands about, you know, athletes, you know, getting past their prime and staying a little bit too long. Usain Bolt thought this was going to be his victory lap in England, and he didn't win anything.
Will Vaughn went.
Oh, he did go to it.
Will Just Vaughn, for that reason?
Well, no, he went to play Glen Eagles in Scotland, but he went to the World Championships because he really likes Usain Bolt.
Had he seen him run before?
Yeah, at Olympics. Sure. Okay, and he said that he was seated next to Justin Gatlin's parents.
Oh, wow.
During the race itself. When Justin Gatlin beat Usain
in the 100.
Cool.
Oh, my
gosh. Yeah, in the 100.
That was the start of it. And it was another, the 400, didn't win the 400, and then the relay.
And he pulled.
Like his leg fell off.
Yeah, and he's just riding on the ground.
Yeah, but you don't, sort of like Bryce Harper.
Right.
But you don't for a second think that he's not the greatest sprinter who ever lived. Because he is.
Best I ever saw.
I don't think anything is diminished.
None of by the way, would have been the best lot of things.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But is there a greater moment when he's winning that some race and he turns to look at the camera and he's smiling at
and broke the world record.
I'm not sure that he ever ran 100 meters full.
I agree.
Yes.
He never ran through the tape. He was so happy.
Having fun.
He was the greatest. No question. There's some news about Tiger Woods. Did you want to talk about this? Did you see this?
I'm unaware.
I don't know if you saw the tox report.
The toxicology report. He had a lot in his system.
Unbelievable.
Well, he had prescription drugs, right?
Vicodin.
What's the over-under?
Strap in.
What's the over-under on how many illicit drugs they found in his system?
Why are they illicit?
Well, I mean,
prescriptions.
Yeah, prescription.
With THC.
I go four.
Like one of the five might get the job done.
I go four.
To do the five?
I go a cocktail of four.
It's Vicodin. Gary, I don't know if you pronounce this. Dilaudid?
Dilaudid is strong from hundreds of years ago.
Yeah, it's a hardcore painkiller.
Yes.
As is Vicodin.
Xanax, Ambien. We've seen that before with them.
I got those.
And THC.
Right. So you got weed, Ambien, Xanax.
Oh, you think it's weed?
Well, that's what THC is.
THC
it's an automatic?
That's the component.
Sad, isn't it? Hashtag sad. I mean, it's actually sad.
It is?
It's actually sad. Because when he was stopped, he thought he was in California. I mean, he was out of it.
At least now you know why.
Yeah.
I mean, my God.
Yeah. I hope he... Well, I hope he finds peace because it does not seem like his medical issues, his body let him down to such a degree that he's shoveling the coal into the furnace because he's in pain all the time.
Right.
Terrible.
Right.
And did you have any thoughts on the big fight between McGregor and Mayweather? It's a week from Saturday. The Maloofs bet $880,000.
I feel like the run-up has been
on who?
Forever.
Yeah, on Mayweather.
Yeah, I don't.
And if they win that bet, by the way, they only win $160,000.
Oh, okay.
I understand why people that like boxing think that McGregor has no chance. And we'll talk about this at greater length at some other time. I will say this, that Floyd Mayweather is a professional boxer who is used to boxing other professional boxers. He's not used to some berserker who runs across the ring and throws 10,000 punches at him for the first couple of... Because he's not used to that.
Yeah.
That is... The puncher's chance for Conor McGregor, who, by the way, is big and strong, relatively speaking, in that weight class.
Sure.
He looks bigger than Floyd.
Yes.
He looks stronger than Floyd. I don't know if he can learn to box, but I don't know if he has to box. I don't know. I don't expect him to win, but that would be the way you would see it, the way you'd envision
it. Why are you...
He's not going to outpoint him.
Notion that the Maloofs would wager $900,000 to win $180,000 is
publicity.
Just weird.
Yeah, they want publicity.
Okay.
All right, are we good?
We are.
All right, so we will take a break. We have Old Guy. I will tell a couple of stories in Old Guy, and we will ask Liz about Kirk Cousins in Old Guy. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Audible read, okay?
Well, they're all Audible.
But this is for Audible.
Oh, okay.
Now that the summer season is here, it means long car rides to the shore, outdoor chores like mowing and gardening. So polish your car while you shine up your life with Audible. Audible is a leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the internet. Audible content includes an unmatched selection of audio books and other audio products. The other audio products really help your life find that glossy finish. Users can sign up as an Audible listener, which gives them book credits and access to short programs, now playing in channels each month for a low monthly fee. Customers download their choices and can access them on their iPhone, Android device, Kindle, iPod, or other MP3 player. Come on, even I have one of these devices. I used to listen only to nonfiction audio where I could learn something, but maybe now I need to queue up some business titles with my recent ventures. Maybe I'd be better off looking in self-help or fantasy. I don't know about fantasy.
Restaurant ownership for dummies?
Yeah, because we're losing money here. Back to the copy. No matter what genre of book you read, Audible has it. Now I'm able to enjoy a walk with my dog and listen to my favorite books. And now you can, too. You can listen to books on walks with your dog. That is, you can't take Chessie yet. I wonder if Chessie listened to the Monk book when training me. Audible is offering our listeners a free audio book with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to Audible, A-U-D-I-B-L-E, audible.com/Tony, and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It is that easy. Go to audible.com/Tony. That is audible.com/Tony, and you can get started today.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
That is for all the girls here.
Old guy radio kids.
Oh, yes.
Bruce Springsteen. Song we call Fire.
Now, do you know where he came up with this song?
I do not. I know that the Pointer Sisters had a hit with it.
I guess he wanted to release it on an album, but it didn't fit with the rest of the songs on an album.
That's a big Bruce thing. Yes.
But he wrote this song after seeing Elvis Presley in concert in Philadelphia and said, I'd like to write a song that maybe Elvis would sing. So he wrote this, sent Elvis a demo tape, but unfortunately the King passed away before it arrived in Graceland.
Now I kind of
hear
story.
It now that you say that. I can hear
this
it.
This was his song for Elvis Presley.
He did quite a fine job with it.
Do you think that Elvis Presley knew who Bruce Springsteen was?
Oh, yes, I think so. I mean, there's a famous story of Bruce, like, scaling the Graceland fence.
Really?
To try to meet Elvis. I don't.
Really?
Actually, I don't. Yes, I think he was arrested. I don't think it was.
At least he wasn't shot like at the White House could happen.
Yeah.
Well, that's once you get inside.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I was too quick answering that. I don't know. I actually don't know.
So people listening to this podcast, we're going to hear it seamlessly, and they're not going to know that we just spent 20 minutes wondering what had happened, Nigel, what had happened to our connections, our electrical...
Technical difficulties.
You've all seen Apollo 13, right?
Yeah.
It was sort of like that.
Okay.
So
this is happening with a certain amount of frequency.
Yes,
lately.
We're going to have to get this looked at before.
Do you think it's Andy Poley and his podcast?
Well, I would love to blame Andy.
Well, then let's do it.
And you got the special vest, didn't you, to land our spaceship?
Well, we tried. For some reason it is acting up, but we're going to work on this. We'll make sure it
gets through. So Liz is here, and I want to ask this. You have a piece coming out in the Washington Post Sunday magazine.
Yes.
In a week, in 2 weeks?
September 10th, that's the season opener for the Redskins in most NFL teams.
Okay.
That's Sunday.
And this is about Kirk Cousins, and you've spent time with Kirk Cousins. Specific to this article and previously in covering
him, both as a backup in the 2 years he's been a starter. And
Kirk Cousins is the most, at the moment, he's the most talked about person in terms of contracts in the NFL.
Yeah.
Because he's the one who could get richer than anyone else out there, not necessarily because he's the best quarterback, but because he's in an optimum position.
Mm-hmm.
He made close to $20 million last year. Mm-hmm. Franchise this year will make 24 and change, and next year would make $32 million. This is a pretty big haul.
If they franchise him.
Yeah, which they can do. They can legally do that.
No one's done it.
Well,
it would be the only way to ensure they retain him.
Has anybody done it twice?
I don't think anybody's done it twice.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, no. The Skins are already outliers.
Yeah, we're beyond where the buses run now.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So the question in Washington, and not just in Washington, but the question all around the league is, will, in your opinion, Kirk Cousins sign? And before I ask an answer to that, I will give what I think is the requisite background here, that it doesn't seem to me he will ever sign with them. That it seems to me he will be courted by at least the Los Angeles Rams and at least the San Francisco 49ers because they have head coaches who have worked with him before as their offensive coordinators. And if he wanted to sign with Washington, he has had ample time and ample opportunity to sign with them. And I think that he has zero intention of signing with them, no matter what he says publicly. And that's the requisite background. What do you think?
I never speak with the authority and certainty and efficiency you do.
Well, because
so
you don't have your own show.
With me, I don't. Right.
And you should.
He certainly had a chance to sign with them last year this offseason, the offseason prior. In both cases, the Redskins lowballed his value that the tag said. So the Redskins did not really make him a serious offer. Most people say, just pay him, just write the check. Why don't they just pay him? it is not that simple. There's, I don't believe there's a dollar figure that will make him sign. I think having the knowledge that he's going to bank $44 million more than takes care of him, his family, generations of cousins. He's fine. And his sense of security doesn't come from how big his bank account is. He's a person of deep religious faith. He doesn't, you know, wear it on his sleeve. It's not like plastered on his locker. There are no, you know, gestures on the field. But I'm just saying, this is a person who feels very secure. He's got the security he wants. He really wants to be great. He wants to win a playoff game, to win a Super Bowl, to, you know, to be part of a team that's heading in that direction. So that's what he's looking for. It's not that Bruce hasn't just come up with the number. That's not the hang up here. Although I think the Skins have misplayed it. That's a different conversation. But I think one thing the average person doesn't realize, few of us realize, he's never had a chance to choose his employer. You know, when you're drafted, he was drafted behind Griffin. So 4 years you're drafted. He's never been a free agent. You know, then they keep using this tag. And it's more than just an NFL term of jargon. It's like, it's like a prearranged marriage, you know, or your parents telling you where you're going to go to college. I mean, whatever is the biggest decision in your life in your 20s or teens or whatever, he's never had a say in that. And I think there is a part, just as an athlete, as a competitor, an undersized guy who at every turn was dismissed, high school, college, he's exceeding expectations. He wants to compete, to push himself to see what his value is. And I think he deserves and is entitled to be on the free agent market. I think that's what he's waiting for. Again, not to just see who's going to write me the biggest check, but, you know, what's the picture like at San Francisco with a new head coach, at the Rams, both with offensive coordinators who believe in me, I've had success with? Are these stable organizations? Is this going to be a stable setup, potentially more stable than the Redskins have been? You know, he was on the front row for all the Griffin years. I mean, he saw the convulsive, you know, Shanahan ouster, the convulsive McLuhan ouster. Just, I mean, what we all saw. I mean, didn't say a peep, but that's the organization he knows. Does that answer any
sort of
part of it?
Sort of. But it leads to another question.
Which is, why
would you want to go to work for people who have been so vindictive publicly against you for so long? Why?
That's a really brilliant question. And I think the latest stunner was the way Bruce Allen handled the deadline arriving, when he had to acknowledge, no, I didn't get this long term as the team president. No, I said in February this deal would be no problem. It wasn't going to be hard to do. I'm going to get it done. And then lo comes July, you haven't gotten it done. So rather than say any one of a million things that would have put a positive face on everybody involved.
Or like, nothing, which
or
also
nothing,
would have been acceptable to
or
say.
Nothing. Yeah. He chose in 6 paragraphs to throw Kirk Cousins under the bus and very clearly try to turn the fan base against the starting quarterback, the person on whom the season most depends.
Mark, would you do
so
that?
It seems
like an odd time.
What management
I mean,
technique
I've,
is
this
that?
Is the 8th season I've covered the Redskins, interrupted by many, many years in between. Yet 8 seasons, I thought I had seen everything. That was the most baffling management decision. You could have said nothing, or all you needed to say is, you know, sadly, we couldn't come to terms. We have so much confidence in Kirk. We cannot wait for the season, but we've both agreed we're just going to set this aside. We're now playing football.
So instead
we're
you said,
this later.
Instead you said, we offered him a whole lot of money, and he snubbed his nose at us. And by the way, I'm going to mispronounce his name 50% of the time.
That is a fair rendering.
Yeah. So if I'm Kirk Cousins, whether I have faith or not, I just
yeah. I mean,
I don't
and he's
well,
such
have
a
faith.
Good. I mean, he is such a good team, I mean. Teammate, a good person.
Right.
He would. I mean, he like deserved a State Department posting for his 45-minute interview he gave after being thrown under the bus by the Redskins. The lengths Cousins went to you know, make clear that he, it's no big deal to mispronounce my name. You know, people do that my whole life. Oh, that's not a big deal. You know, he smoothed everything out. He did absolutely what Bruce Allen was unable to do, and you know, elevated both parties so that he could focus on football. I mean, he doesn't want a circus while he's trying to get used to a million new receivers. And, you know, there's a lot of change going on with this team. There's a lot of variables. And he wants his focus on the field.
Can I tell my orange pants story now?
Please.
Oh, that would be such a welcome segue
so,
after my turgid
football. No, it was not turgid at all. It was wonderful. Okay. I guess I'm going to change the mood a little
bit.
So some years back, when I go to the beach, when I go to Delaware, I tend to stop at certain stores all the time. I stop at the Bass Outlet and continually buy the same pair of shoes. I bought two more while I was out there.
Why not?
I now
two
have
more shoes?
Four backup pairs of the exact same brown boat shoe.
In each of your houses or like all clustered
they're all
in
at the
one
Delaware
of the houses?
House, right?
I've got three here, one out there and three here. Okay. I stop there. I go to Calvin Klein. I don't know why I go to Calvin Klein. I can't fit in anything at Calvin Klein. So, I mean, it's made for skinny people, and I can't do that. And so I end up buying
a
tie.
Twig, my friend.
You know, I end up buying a tie or something like that. I go to
Your ties fit you, though.
Yeah, right? Ties are good. I go to Cole Haan to see what shoes I don't want, because then I go to Bass and buy the shoes that I want. In any case. And the other store that I go to all the time is Brooks Brothers. And Brooks Brothers is a store that it's a very traditional American fashion store, very, very conservative. You cannot go wrong buying Brooks Brothers. I mean, you really can't. You can't go wrong. And they also, unlike other clothing stores, unlike places where you buy pants, they give you a true size. If you buy a 38, it's a 38. If you buy a 36, it's a 36. If you claim you're a 36, but you're used to buying 38s, you're not going to get into the 36.
No. Mm-hmm.
Not at Brooks Brothers. So some years back, I was wandering through Brooks Brothers on a particularly bright and sunny day, and I saw a rack of pants in the window, and it was an 80% off rack.
Nice.
80%
That's
off.
A good rack.
And one of the pairs there was a 37-inch pair of orange pants. And I, of course, at that time...
Like a rust orange or like a Clemson loud orange?
No, closer
like
to Clemson.
Trump orange? Like
closer to Clemson. Not as Ricky Fowler-ish as those, but orange.
Right. Orange.
No, like
no
an
rust.
Orange.
Right.
Not
like
rust.
A fall.
No, not fall.
Leaf.
I got those. I got the turning leaf corduroys. No. No. These are orange
90%
pants.
90% off was still
so
a no.
80%
just,
off.
No. Yeah, no.
So I bring them home because I can fit into 37s at that time, which to me is a major triumph in my life at that time about 3 or 4 years ago. And I bring them home, and I'm very proud of myself. They were 80% off. They're about $30 or something like that. And I bring them home, and my son Michael, who is not here now to defend himself, my son holds them up and looks at me and goes, well, they're faded. They're faded from the light. Where were they? And I said, well, they were in the window rack. And he said, well, all the way up and down the side,
God.
All the way up and down the side, they're one. It's one side is much lighter than the
pants,
other.
Bro.
And they look right. And he made fun of me. So I wore them once, and then he continued to make fun of me. And I put them
I mean,
on.
Was he right? Could you see this?
Well,
technically
he was right.
Okay, technically they were faded.
He was right. They were faded.
Did you wear them to garden or to go actually
no,
go outside?
No, he wore these out.
I wore them to dinner.
Yeah.
Oh.
I wore them to dinner.
Well, a dark
proudly
place like this,
so.
You could get away with it.
Proudly so, but he would always make fun of me. He's not here to defend himself. He's in South Carolina at the moment. So then I wandered through Brooks Brothers again. As I always end up in Brooks Brothers, and I always end up at the 80% rack or the 60% rack or whatever was going on. And this time,
love a sale.
This time there were orange pants, 80% off, and these were $99.50 list. $99.50. So I'm going to get them for about $19.80.
No tax
or something
in Delaware.
Like that. No tax in Delaware.
Great deal.
And I try them on, and they're 36s.
Did you fade check them?
I fade checked them.
Okay.
I try them on, and they're 36s, And I'm happy about this because I can fit into them. Because I'm getting thin. I'm probably dying. You know, but I'm not
we're
today.
We're all dying, Tone.
Not today.
Not today.
Not tonight. Maybe tonight. Not today. So I try them on. I say, I've got to have these. And I present a coupon, a $20 coupon, not 25% off.
So you're walking out of
there. Wait.
They're paying you a nickel?
I present a $20 coupon for being a good customer. And I say, and they go, well, you can't use this.
Why not?
You can't use the coupons.
Print. Wait, offer only.
You can't use the coupons on anything marked down past 50%. I said, really? Because I also handed them a Tanger outlet coupon for 25% off, and they said, no, you can't use that. But then upon further review, the $20 coupon was good.
Because it was a good
was
customer
good.
Coupon. It wasn't
right.
Like a standard
so
offer.
He said to me, and you have to use a credit card. In order to get it, you have to use the credit card. Now, I have the credit card. I have a Brooks Brothers credit card. Because I wander in, and every year I buy another crazy seersucker jacket that, by the way, when you wear them on TV, they oscillate
in
such
a
way.
Seersucker. Yeah.
And the director, Tom Howard, goes crazy. I'm wearing it tomorrow with the orange pants.
Oh, my God.
Okay, because he says to me, you're going to use a
Atticus
credit card.
Finch meets Phil Fulmer.
That's exactly what it looks like. It looks like something off the set of To Kill a Mockingbird. Right. That's what I'm going to look like tomorrow. Like
I'm
from the 1940s,
right,
you know, which is my era anyway. So he says, could you do me a favor? Would you allow me to say that that the pants weren't $99.50, but could you just make it a straight $100? And I go, yeah, because at 90% off, whatever, 80%
right.
off, they're 20.
It's a negative transaction.
I got them for nothing.
Zero.
Free, baby.
Zero.
Free.
Nice.
I have these pants for nothing. So I don't care how terrible they look.
Yeah, even if you got what you paid for.
I got them for nothing. And I told Michaelis, and he said, you're a crazy old man. You're a crazy old man that you would do this. But they're not particularly faded. Now, they're a little heavy for the summer. They're like twill. They're a little bit heavy. I'm wearing them.
Michael should get the 37s.
Did they run the credit card for a zero purchase?
Or, like
or do you
one
just
cent.
Like...
Yes.
Oh, how, that's victory.
No, they ran it for the full purchase, but then they took
they credit.
Off...
Okay.
They took off the credit.
When you say
how's that?
When you say not particularly faded.
No, they're orange. They're
right.
orange.
But there's not like, you know,
I mean, there's a market
orange.
For this. Far wore yellow pants to a wedding and looked great. Bright yellow, and they look great. So
look
I
at
mean,
his hair, though. You can pull that off.
We
that
can, because he's good looking,
great.
Too.
Yeah.
He's got real hair. Not like my, I got no hair. So,
but what you have is orange.
They're the hair, what is left is orange.
So were they shaking their head? Had they ever seen anything like that? Had they said, you know,
move.
Normally people pay us money when they
normally,
buy our products?
Normally, but it was wise shopping.
Right.
It was
that's
very
awesome.
Wise
that's
shopping
a
at
great,
that point.
That
so I'm going to wear
story.
These. Now, I was going to talk all about playing golf with Barry Rosenthal. I'm delaying that
I
to the next podcast.
I promise when you wear them, everyone is going to hear about what they cost you.
Right.
Right?
Zero.
Right, that story.
You should be proud of me, Liz.
Sadly, I'm not. I mean, I have learned the hard way that, you know, the deal that you're getting, you know,
I have
if
to wear
the thing
pants.
Is kind of stupid and right. or it doesn't fit or like one day you might fit into it or it's
I fit into it this
that,
morning. I don't know about
you know,
tomorrow morning.
I did this morning. I kind of think it's better to pay retail for something you really want.
I paid nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing.
I got
and
a pair
I have
of pants.
No money and
I got a pair of pants for free.
No.
For free.
I know.
I think I've talked about
they
this
sound
on this
ugly,
show.
Tony.
I have an article of clothing with a similar story. My dad purchased for me, this has got to be going back 15 years, from the Ralph Lauren outlet.
Yeah.
A Marlo cashmere long sleeve pullover. I wear it basically as like an overshirt in the winter. And it was a $1,200 shirt, was the sticker on the shirt, the price tag on the shirt.
What did they reduce it to?
$1,200, reduced 50% to $6, 50% to $3, 50% to $150, 50% to $75, and then they marked it out 50%, so he went in for $37.50 and got it for me. And
fantastic.
Every time I took it to get dry cleaned, I would say, can you please leave the price tag on it? I still have the price tag on it. And when I wear it, it's going to be like your pants. The whole story is about, you see my $1,200 shirt? That's, you know.
You can do that every once in a while.
Yeah, why not?
You can do that. So I did that, not for $1,200, but I got a free pair of pants.
Free. Yeah, well, yours were free.
I'm pretty happy about that. We will take a break, and we will come back. Do we have any email?
We do have some emails.
Is the machinery going to work?
Yes, that
Do
will
we
work.
Have a jingle?
We have a jingle about...
Do you know the great Joe Arrow is here tonight? He
I
could
know.
Probably sing
live. Is that right?
Probably could sing it live.
Great
yes.
Joe Arrow, ladies and
do a live
gentlemen.
Performance.
Yes. No, this one is... It's from Brendan in Jersey. That's all the name he gives us. And
Burn.
It's about the Red Line. I think you'll like it.
The Red Line?
Right.
Is it called on fire?
It's called Arcing on the Red Line.
Arcing on the Red Line is
oh.
good. Okay, so
yes.
we'll be back. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony
so this Kornheiser is the Show. This is the policy genius ad. This is about life insurance. Life insurance is not the most fun thing in the world to talk about, but it is important. This is the part of the podcast where we mention life insurance. Don't go hitting mute because this is even more important than it is tedious. We get it. Life insurance is confusing. It can take forever, and if there's ever a payout, you won't even be around to spend it. But one company is making it a lot easier. Policygenius.com is the place to go to learn about life insurance, compare quotes from America's top providers, and save up to 40% on your policy. It sounds crazy, but that has never existed before. Policy Genius has placed over $5 billion in life insurance. Their simple, user-friendly website helps you work out exactly which policy is right for you and then finds you the best price. It takes just 5 minutes to apply for a quote. In fact, most Americans think life insurance costs 2 to 3 times more than it really does. And if you're one of them, you stand to save more than you think. If you have any questions at all, there's a team of licensed experts waiting to talk you through it. No call waiting, no pressing 3 followed by the pound sign. You get actual customer service. And they don't just do life insurance. You can get health insurance. You can insure your pet. Jack could get insurance. You can protect your Jack the Beagle. You can protect your income. And if you don't need to do any of that, they will tell you. If you've been putting off getting life insurance or you want to make sure the insurance you have is right for you, check out policygenius.com today. Save up to 40% just by comparing policies. The quotes are free. No sales pressure, zero hassle. Policygenius.com. It is life insurance for the 21st century. So P-O-L-I-C-Y is policy. Genius, as we all know, starts with a J. No, G-E-N-I-U-S, policygenius.com.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Sometimes my commute at night is filled with sparks that are deathly bright. This only adds to my constant consternation. It's supposed to
Huey
be
Lewis.
The best transport, the one that all the people can afford. Just what is it worth paying for? Arcing on the Red Line. Trains never on time, ever present. Embarrassment for the city.
Sad but true.
Arcing on the Red Line. Flaming all the time. Take a look at this place. See what's become of DC.
That's Brendan in New Jersey. That's fabulous. Arcing on the Red Line.
Rocking
I love
After
that.
Midnight, I want to say. Was
that
tune?
Is that what
tune?
It's
is
the
that Huey right? Lewis thing?
Before we get into the mailbag, I want to thank Steve Sands of the Golf Channel and NBC for coming on the show today. I'd also like to thank our sponsors today, Casper Mattresses, Audible.com, and Policy Genius. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Chris Foster of Subaru Sales in El Paso, Texas, during a recent encounter in my sales job at Subaru, it was revealed to me that my customer is a retired arborist. I could hardly hide the joy on my face when I found out and told him that the host of a podcast I listened to was looking for an arborist. He was delighted at the thought of coming out of retirement until unfortunately had to inform him that you are not local. Yeah. It was a David Aldridge moment for me, as I'd never heard of an arborist until your show. Give Bootsy my best and tell Michael it is monsoon season in El Paso. Sully from Boston, a likely story. They're all Sully from Boston. My girlfriend Kelly and I welcomed an 8-pound, 5-ounce little boy we have named Ronan Driscoll Sullivan into the world August 12th. But we are happy in Boston, but we are wondering if you had any openings in your practice as a pediatrician. We won't hold our breath. I'm a doctor, but not necessarily a pediatrician.
Right.
From Derek Lipson of the United States Army Special Forces in Abilene, Kansas. Thanks to Matt Williams, appreciate you convincing Harper to run out all ground balls. Mike McLean, who's in transit to Chattanooga, Tennessee. Not a day after leaving my old job, I was shocked and immensely excited to hear the heartfelt eat it message from my former colleague, Glenn Black. I immediately played it to the woman I'm related to by marriage. I am so excited. A bald orange man just told me to eat it. She was understandably unimpressed. Thank you and the entire crew, and of course, Mr. Glenn Black, for many years of shows and related conversation. I expect your show will help these two littles stay in touch over the coming years.
By the way, walking on a thin line. Huey
walking
Lewis,
on a thin line. That's Jim Moser in Landville, Pennsylvania. The woman to whom I'm related by marriage is often amused as I relay bits of the things that I hear on the show. This past weekend, after seeing Bryce Harper get injured, I mentioned to her that I thought you might do a podcast on Monday. She asked why, and I told her that the best player in the Nationals was injured and possibly out for the season. She said, oh, no, was it the iris? You mean the orchid, I replied? Oh, yeah, that one. I'm making progress with her, but clearly it's just baby steps. And here is one I'm going to go on with for a while. This is fantastic. This is from Lori Haspel Aronson. Have I told the Haspel suit story here?
Yes. Not entirely.
I have told the Haspel suit story. Tony, we heard your radio show today about our Haspel suit. We had a good laugh over your banter, and we all appreciated the commentary. Will, our executive VP, absolutely remembers speaking to you on the phone, and all he knows is that he had a message to call Paul. He kept calling me Paul.
That's right, you mentioned
As I go on and on about this Haspel suit. We hope you enjoy your Haspel suit in a box. Your suit shouldn't wrinkle, right? Call us back if you'd like more info on the suit you bought or what else is available in the line. You're lucky you caught our 60% sale. And by the way, we now have a manufacturing facility and your next suit will fit even better. Thanks again, Lori. I am taking this suit. I need a tailor. I ran into Chauncey on the street. I'm taking the suit to Saks, which is literally 200 yards away from where I can't do it tonight because they're closed at 8. But it's 200 yards away. I'm going to get either Lori or Mike to help me out, get a tailor, and make this suit great. Make this suit great. So
again,
to Lori Haspel Aronson, thank you so much for this thing. That's it.
That's great.
I don't have any more.
That's brilliant.
Are we out? Are we not out?
Oh, that we still have a minute. Sorry.
We still have a minute? Okay.
Are we on a clock here?
I tried the suit on today. It fits. I mean, the sleeves are too long and the pants are too long, but that's...
Well, where are the orange pants?
Would the orange pants fit with that?
Well, there wouldn't be a suit.
Well,
no, I'm wearing I'm telling you, I'm going to PTI tomorrow in orange pants, an orange tie, which I bought months ago, a blue and white seersucker jacket, and a white shirt.
What's the director's name again?
Tom Howard is...
He's going to go bad.
He is.
It's hard to match oranges.
Well, nobody's going to see my pants.
Except
that's the whole point.
No one on television.
Right.
Can't you stand up to be like, by the way, these are the pants I got for free?
This is how we
I don't know that anybody knows the free pants story in the studio.
Sure.
And I think if I said I got them for free, Wilbon would be very disappointed.
Of course he would.
Because Wilbon spends $4,000.
Or he would love it.
I think he would just look at me and say, why do you do this, old man? Why do you insist on getting clothes for discount? My son even says that. Do you have any coupons today?
Andy Poland would worship it.
Oh, Andy Poland would go crazy for this.
Yes, he would.
All right, we ran out of time. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white. And thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Can I ask a practical question? Are we doing Stonehenge tonight?
Sunday afternoon, we were consuming lots of D's, transaturated tunes. Yeah, guiding costs on Bradley stocks, cash eating for Harvard talks of the LHC. Me seeking common corporate sensibility. Oh, my dad, be up in management. We spent so much time together. tragedy, baby. Me a better, pure of love. At times I won't fight on life. Just you and I. Talking, talking, talking dreams.
Empty house on this empty